Comedy on Vinyl, episode 99. Jason Klom, your host here. Very quickly, just wanted to thank you guys again for listening. We're almost at episode 100. Very excited. We're going to be doing something special with former guest Matt Lieberman. It was his idea, and it's going to be quite embarrassing for me. But if you've listened to the Dan and Jay's Comedy Hour podcast yet, it won't be that unusual. It's going to be fun. This episode is the Levinson Brothers, whose names you probably heard before when Rob Kuttner was on the podcast. We discussed Free to Be You and Me, but specifically, It's Okay to Do Stuff, which is the album he put together with the Levinson Brothers that was a lighthearted parody homage of Free to Be You and Me. This one is a little bit of sketch, mostly music, again, that is, has fun with American history. We'll just say that. It's called 2776, and you can go to 2776.us and you can check it out. You can buy it there. It officially comes out July 1st, 2014, which is, of course, a Tuesday, as usual. What is not so usual about this comedy album is that it benefits the charity One Kid, One World. And you can find all the information about that as well at 2776.us. So all the proceeds go there. And to the charity, that is. And the Levinson Brothers just put together another piece of really funny comedy. They had more time. As you'll hear, they had a lot more time to put this one together. So they got to make something, that they were passionate about. So check it out. Enjoy episode 99. And also, go ahead and get your copy of 2776. You can pre-order it on Amazon right now. Thanks a lot. Here's how you can own 5,000 comedy albums, and I'm recording because it's an interesting conversation.
Sure.
This guy named Jeff Abraham, he's a PR guy. He's just been collecting rare stuff, and that includes like local comedians, like guys who or women.
Like pressed 50 albums.
Exactly. And they did it just to push out at the club that they worked every night at for their whole life. You know?
Have you found anything in there that was actually hysterical?
The stuff that he played, because I went to his house, he's like, let's pick 6 or 7 that I've never listened to and listen to them. Mostly garbage.
I'm sure.
Mostly garbage. But there's always like little bits where like, oh, this is pretty good. And then the rest of it's either super racist or sexist or foul or bad, like bad quality, because they just sound like they recorded it on the old version.
You should do an alt, which is just racism on vinyl, which I'm sure will be racist comedy on vinyl.
Good God. And it's one of those things where you're almost tempted to buy albums like that when you see it out of just pure...
You want
to
cringe.
Yeah. And you're like, oh, fuck. And it's just, sometimes you don't expect it. It looks like an innocent, cute little album, and it's like... here's a funny quote-unquote Mexican voice, and here's
there was an album that we had growing up. I remember specifically, who was it? It must have been it might have been Jonathan Winters. Didn't he do a totally racist Asian character?
Buddy Hackett.
Buddy Hackett.
Had a waiter.
And we had a CD.
Oh, yeah.
We had a CD that was just like classic comedy bits that we used to listen to in the car sometimes or something.
Oh, God.
And when it started, And I guess I didn't know how racist it was.
Sure. Of course not.
But I think I was old enough that I knew that it was not... Okay. I think I heard that stuff at like 13, 14.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't think...
Oh, right. It made you...
I don't think that's okay.
Yeah.
Also, why is the audience cracking up so much at that voice?
Oh, yeah. No, but that's just it. It's like these residual, vaudeville fans, there's still that echo of people who love that shit,
right.
Which is frightening. I mean, I tend not to judge it if you're ancient. It's at that point quaint racism and kind of adorable. Not really. But you know what I'm saying? Like, it's like, whatever, just they're of a different time. Mm-hmm. But it does, it frightens me. And surprises me, though, stuff like Robin Williams, not to call him out, but there's some shit he did in the... I was listening to A Night at the Met the other day. There's some shit in there that's just like, no, you shouldn't have said that. That's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. Just every once in a while.
Did it get laughs?
Oh, yeah. Because it's Robin Williams, but half the jokes on that album. I don't know if you've ever...
Jokes.
Have you heard that album?
Uh-uh.
Okay. I loved it when I was a kid, and I still kind of love it for the energy, but most of them aren't right. They're not jokes.
Right.
I'm not going to judge it
I'll judge this shit that's like I said, super racist. I'm like, I'll discard that. But the rest of it's just like, I get it. The energy is what sold it.
Right.
Like, he's like, oh, my God, this guy over here saying blah. Like, he, like, doesn't make sense. Like, there's a guy down on the stage saying, what are you doing here? And that was supposed to be a punchline. And it was like, that you just said nothing. And, it again, the energy is what sells it. And that's why you're a kid.
You know? Yeah, but that, I mean, I think that's what you learn as a kid, mm-hmm. is that there's times, even when you're young, mm-hmm. there's times when you get laughs when you couldn't, when it was all just because you delivered it right.
Not to seg into our topic tonight, but the whole energy gets laughs. I mean, we were, like, I re-listened to this album. I don't know if you want to get into it yet.
Oh, we should, just very quickly.
Okay.
I'm here with the Levinson brothers. You want to introduce yourselves? I have Joel and Steven here with me.
I'm Joel.
And I'm Steven.
I'm the younger one.
Okay.
I'm the older one. We grew up in
Dayton, Ohio.
Midwestern Jewish guys.
We live a block away from each other out here in Los Angeles right now for the moment.
That's adorable.
It's really cute. We have kids that are the same age and hang out.
That's awesome.
And now we're working on our comedy album together.
Yep. Yeah. Finished the comedy album.
Which is great. It's called 2776.
With our partner Rob Kuttner.
Yes,
who's been on the show.
And refused to be on this episode. I'm kidding. He just said it'd probably be good to have you guys on this one since you weren't on the last,
cool.
last one. So let's... We'll get to the premise of the album, but let's not kill the flow of what we were talking about, which was... I've already forgotten. But, you know, you want to talk about Stan Freberg.
You're talking about the energy of the delivery
as opposed to
the actual comedy.
Mm-hmm. So this is an album that we both, I'm sure this experience is really common to people. We grew up listening to our parents' comedy albums.
Of course.
And those are, we didn't buy any other comedy albums for a long time. Mm-hmm. And these albums we listened to as if they were story albums and listened to them over and over and over and wore down them vinyl, just listening to them. But I haven't heard the album in years and years. And I knew we'd be talking, so I took a listen. Mm-hmm. And joke after joke, it was like, I could not have understood that joke.
Right.
That joke I wouldn't have gotten. That joke I still don't get.
That's Rusty's reference.
So, but you knew it was
fun. You knew something funny was happening.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And without an audience, no less.
Right.
Yeah.
It's that good. Mm-hmm. Like, because there's a lot of old shit that I would listen to that I know, but very specifically was because, oh, this audience is laughing.
You're right. That's unusual for comedy albums, I guess, the older ones. Like, when I think of the Alan Sherman stuff.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
The audience is losing their minds.
Yep.
But this one is, you're right, it's the arrested development to Alan Sherman's MASH.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Good call. I like that. Forgive me, the name of the Stan Freberg album is The History of the United States.
Stan Freberg modestly presents The United States of America, Volume 1.
That's right.
And there was a Volume 2.
There's a Volume.
Never heard.
I heard it. Dad bought it when it came out on CD. He brought it home. I listened to it many, many times. I probably still know some of the bits from it. It takes over from the Revolutionary War and it goes all the way up through. It goes all the way up through Tin Pan Alley doing a song about World War I.
But it doesn't go 30 years later.
It doesn't go into World War II, I think, for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
But I guess in his mind, either he didn't have the material. I don't know. You know, we should look it up. But either he didn't have the material, or in his mind, 30 years was enough time that had passed. Now he could go back and make fun all the way up to World War I.
Yeah.
He couldn't have done that. It was too soon. Yeah, it was still legitimately too soon. There were,
Spanish American War jokes.
Right. Thousands of people who were still alive from World War I.
Yeah. That's fascinating.
But there's a lot of stuff in that one too. It's not. I don't think it's as funny, but I have no idea.
Yeah.
Because I don't know how funny the first one is. I only know how important it was for my brain.
Yes. Yeah.
If that makes sense.
I just wonder what it's doing to your brain at the time, because you're making me think more of, like, what it was doing to me rather than what I was actually receiving, you know, like, information-wise.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what it was just pounding into my head, rhythms. It's pounding into my
head. Yeah, absolutely. The delivery.
Exactly.
Yep. Yeah.
So. And also, with this specifically, because it's a version, it's the, you are learning American history at the same time in school, and this is the one that makes it, maybe what I'm learning in the school isn't exactly correct.
Right.
Like, maybe, one of the bits is that he gives, He gives you the bubbles and bangles and bright shiny beads. What they're paying the Indians for Manhattan. Mm-hmm. And I love that the Indians are like, in his version, in our version, it's white kids growing up in America are always like, they for $16 worth of gold beads, we bought it. What an mm-hmm. amazing deal! And in his version, they're like, eh, fuck Manhattan. Yeah, I don't. Yeah. And you're like, oh, maybe the Indians don't think of property the same way as we do. Or
right?
Yeah. So it was just such a weird. Anyway,
it's really like, I don't want to say ahead of its time because that sounds trite, but it's so, I should have done my research as far as the year. Is it 60, 61, I think, around there? It's just.
Is it that early?
It's very early 60s. Oh. It's just so remarkably open-minded, and not to say that everybody was a closed-minded bigot at the time, but it's just so.
Everybody was a closed-minded.
Except for Stan Freeberg.
Except for Stan Freeberg, apparently. Yeah. The man was a
and his friends.
Genius.
And, yeah.
Yeah, and he's got some of the earliest best fucking voice actors in there, Paul Frees and stuff, like just amazing voice work on it.
So I don't know, I've memorized the album, but yeah. I don't know anything about how it was made, his mm-hmm. career beyond before or after that album.
I know that he did a lot of radio voices.
So that,
he's a radio voice guy, mm-hmm. and I don't know anything else about anybody else involved in it. Mm-hmm. I have no idea if he wrote the music or somebody else wrote the
album.
Do you know that?
I don't know if he actually orchestrated it. I should actually look. I should have brought the album with me. I'm an asshole. But
album is actually, it's like, it's as if it's a Broadway play. There's a.
I think it's more like a radio play, isn't it?
I don't know.
I mean, I guess the problem is I've never heard a radio play or really seen a Broadway comedy musical. Yeah. So the two frames of reference I might have for that, I do not.
I mean, there's a... What's the thing you play at the beginning of...
That was my fault, everybody. Sorry. I
scared the living shit out of me.
Me too.
That was good. 1961.
That was Foley work. I'm doing real radio Foley work of me smashing this.
Would not have allowed that on his album. Right.
Now you need to do the door closing, and you need to do footsteps.
I'm sure.
But there is really good sound design in terms of, like, the George Washington at... Valley Forge.
Mm-hmm.
It's
so good.
Like, yeah. It sounds like it's like
right.
it's
that
done
is
in,
a,
that's
that
radio,
is radio
stuff to be doing it yeah. like it's in the field. And it sounds mm-hmm. such a, I'm sure, lost skill, but it's just an awesome one.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that I'm very particularly curious about. It's something that I like to do because I'm writing a comedy album myself. And
oh,
one
yeah?
of those things I think about is like, uh-huh. how important is production design and its. More important than I think I realized, because I did a comedy album 15 years ago. It was garbage, but I did it in my own house. You know, did all that shit myself, and I remembered like, you know, these are not great sketches, but enough people like them because of just how environmentally solid they were.
Yeah,
you know, and how involved are you guys in that part of 2776? Or did you just write it, or did you guys produce it too?
Well, Joel, we produced it, and Joel wrote all the music.
I wrote 26 of the songs. Jesus. There were two others that, and then there's probably another 30 or 40 songs that I wrote that didn't make it, or like variations where they were like, God. I wrote one and I'd write it and I'd send it around. They'd be like, do it another way, do it another way, over and over again. I'm trying to think of which songs specifically there were like so many incarnations of. Oh, Toymageddon. Uh-huh. That's one song. They had me do like five different versions of it. Jeez. And then finally we sent it to Yola Tango and they were like,
we'll do
we're
going
to do it.
You.
We're going to do it. Because I wanted it to be my original, you know, my original thought with it was that it was going to be a jingly, happy, okay. Christmas, catchy song. And then when Yola Tango agreed to do it, it was like, you know, you guys probably know Yola Tango style better than I do,
than
being
me,
that
yeah.
you are they. But other than that, I wrote all the stuff. And then, yeah, with the production design, like, sometimes it's been mixed by about 12 different wonderful people who donated their time mixing mm-hmm. it and stuff. But, so we would give, so some of it I would send them fully everything, here's all the orchestration and all uh-huh. the everything, and they would mix it. And some of them, it would be, can you add a jackhammer to this?
Okay.
Or can you, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
So everything but one jackhammer is the short answer. Yeah.
God, that's insane. So how much time of yours was this? How long has this been going?
I think it's exactly as old as my youngest son.
Yeah.
Which is about 16 months.
Shit.
Yeah.
It's basically been like a full-time job for 16 months.
Yeah. My God. And We'll plug more at the end, but it's for charity, specifically for charity.
For One Kid, One World, all the proceeds, all the artists donated their time, like I was saying, the mixers, studios were donating their time or giving us deeply discounted rates.
Yeah.
The CD Baby has been wonderful.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Giving us a great break.
Yeah, and just to like, and then all the artists, obviously. And so, yeah, so it's benefiting One Kid, One World, all the proceeds, and it's a charity in LA that picks like really specific cool things around the world to help. So, you know, a dorm room in Kenya, mm-hmm. or a schoolhouse in El Salvador or whatever. So you kind of see where your money's going.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's great.
That's so good. So is this for you? Is it like we have an idea for an album? Let's put it together when we can put it together. It's like you said, it's taking up 16 months of your time. So do you just want to keep doing this? Is this a thing for you?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. It's absolutely our dream job if somebody would pay us to do it.
What is it? Damn One Kid, One World. We're spending all the money on dormitories in Kenya. We could maybe afford to buy food for our kids.
Yeah, it is. It's what we want to do all the time. It's phenomenal. But it came about because we did the other one with Rob that you talked
mm-hmm.
about.
Mm-hmm.
And we did that in like 3 weeks, 4 weeks, and we were like, "What if we?
This could do some,
what
this
if
could
we
be
spend time,
actually, yeah.
energy, and make it?" So we kind of, as soon as that thing was done, mm-hmm. we just started some phone call brainstorming. We're like, "How do we write jokes about everything we want to write jokes about?"
Yeah,
and this was the framework: traveling back and forth through the past, present, and future of the 1,000 years of American history.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get to make every joke we want about the future, every mm-hmm. joke we want about American history, every joke we want about the present, and set it in the context of this.
Mm-hmm.
And so obviously the Stan Freberg album was a big influence.
Of course.
On this album.
Yeah, this overlaps.
The America focus,
totally.
The history.
And that's the thing. It's like, the big one is you're like, listen, this guy, he set the stage for how you make fun of America in musical
yeah.
comedy.
Mm-hmm.
So anything we were doing, we have to reference against that. Is like, is this Stan Freberg free territory for
right.
us to cover? Or
right.
yeah.
My God. So what's the first comedy album you ever listened to? I mean, obviously you listen to this a ton, but do you know?
Do you
mean,
count Winnie the Pooh by Carol Channing as a comedy album?
Oh my God. Yes, absolutely. Why not?
Do you?
I would.
Her voices are, I think that's it. I guess that's it.
So,
I don't know.
She's in Free to Be You and Me. She's pretty funny.
Have you? Steve
solid.
Allen had a.
That's not comedy.
It's not comedy. But it's musical bits. It's not exactly comedy, but it's clever.
Is the thing is like, you know, with hipsters, there are a lot of things that are taken as comedy that aren't necessarily so.
Okay,
it's
not comedy.
I'm open to these kinds
no,
of things.
But it was a very early album.
The question is who was trying to get us to laugh that
yeah.
we listened to us?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it might have been. Our father putting Stan Freberg on
yeah,
first.
Yeah.
And I don't
okay.
know what time when he started putting it on for you, but I'm assuming he put it on for me even younger because you had responded to it. That's how
I
he did a lot of stuff.
I remember. It was
like
always there.
I think by 7,
yeah.
he was playing it for me.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
7 or 8, right? And you were probably 15 or 16 at that point.
Yeah, I don't know.
No, you definitely were 15 or 16.
I had no idea.
That I can guarantee.
You were the math guy. Okay, good. I'll keep that in mind. Okay, we've already established then, you know, you're listening to it, maybe you don't understand it, but you understand that it's fun. I mean, was it the thing where, like, dad's responding to this, so you're learning from that?
I just remember the French horns joke.
The French horns
joke.
A joke
we could get.
It's
yeah.
so good, though.
That was the joke. I can almost picture my father standing in the room while it's playing on the record, laughing at it. So, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't...
And you knew the voices were funny.
Sure.
Yeah, the voices. I think that's it. I mean, I think that's where we. I think that's.
Yeah.
I guess you just know something funny. I think that's got to be because Dad thought it was funny.
Mm-hmm.
And we just discovered something recently,
mm-hmm.
which I think is fascinating. Definitely won't be fascinating to anybody else in the world other than
that's
the person
one thing
sitting
we
next
know.
To me. Is that
which is me, not you.
Our father, when VHS was out and we got our first VHS player,
mm-hmm.
the first thing he rented was Police Squad.
Awesome.
And we were watching through all those episodes of Police Squad.
That's
I remember
so
it vividly. And he was the first movie I went to
uh-huh.
in the theater was Top Secret as a 3 or 4 year old kid or whatever.
Shit.
He pushed comedy and loved that stuff specifically. Stan Freeberg he loved.
Yeah.
And just in the past year, I realized he's not the funny one in our family. Mom is funnier than he is. Yeah. Substantially funnier than he is. His jokes are, he's wonderful and sweet and great. He has great taste. His jokes are fall flat aggressively. And my mother's jokes still hit almost every time.
Well, she's doing a character.
She does
it all the time.
She's been in a character since 1942. No, I don't know. So anyway,
couldn't possibly be.
You're right. So that's it. Anyway, our father was the arbiter of comedy taste in our house and pushed it among. You know, this was that to him. This is the equivalent of Airplane.
Yeah,
it's the audio equivalent of Airplane. It was like, this is funny, and
is that common when you talk to people about their first albums? It's their, you know, it's their parents' albums. Yeah. I'm sure.
I mean, the thing, like, the younger they get. No, it's people that are closer to our ages that still is a thing where, and I think, and I, my theory is that, I say theory so high-mindedly, but just my idea is that simply because vinyl was, I mean, it's the first real portable medium that, that you couldn't record over, you know, and, you know, it was so fucking communal, and your parents, and because of that, your parents by nature, like, share this with people, share, I mean, there were party albums in the 50s and 60s, so your parents wanted to share it, and then, like, it's just instinct, I think, to share it with your family.
Right.
And once vinyl got pushed out mid-late 80s, then,
it's know, really the introduction of the headphone
that's
that destroyed
also,
it, right?
That's true, but also, there are plenty of stories about people, you know, who in the 70s would just sit down and they listen to it with themselves or with their friends.
Right.
They'd still share it. I mean, that's a big thing, too, is like we talk about whether or not people made friends over comedy. Did you guys ever make friends, like sharing comedy with other people?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Monty Python and
Baseball. God, why didn't I even think of the Monty Python albums when you asked this question?
And then I connected.
Because I guess we didn't listen to it on vinyl.
There was the cool teacher at our school who, like, made tapes of Fireside Theater and gave them to us, and that was, like...
so good.
Yeah.
I've still never heard Fireside Theater.
Really?
Never heard
it. All right.
I know that it was
a
thing.
I'll get
you some. Okay.
Just because it's... Yeah. I was introduced to it way too fucking late, and it's phenomenal.
Cool.
They're the Pink Floyd of comedy.
Okay.
Like, the albums that are an entire sketch,
you mean
it takes
forever?
It takes forever, but they connect. There's no real break, and it's just... mind-blowing. Anyway.
Huge joke density.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay, cool.
And also really well-produced. That's another thing, too.
And I'm sure I miss half the jokes.
Like, of course.
A lot of references.
You mean, like, Marx Brothers joke density? Like, boom,
not
boom, boom.
Not that type of joke.
Not the same type.
Like, some of the chaos... I mean, the same chaos and sensibility.
That is true.
But not... Yeah.
Transplant that into the hippie era.
Okay.
You know, they came out at the exact same time. A little bit before Monty Python, actually. And so, yeah, counterculture with the... anarchy of the Marx Brothers, and then really good production production values, which is one thing that I do miss in comedy albums. And honestly, you know, not to kiss butt, but it's like one of the really impressive things about both these albums of yours. Like, they sound great.
Oh, thanks.
And that's something that I really, really value. Even though I'm a person who will buy a 50-cent scratched up vinyl record, like, I still, if I can find a pristine copy of something, like, honestly, Cheech and Chong, because it's some of the best puts together stuff, Fire Sign, and then, like, you then have to skip 10 years back to Stan Freberg, because he was one of the last people to do it before Lou Adler was touching Cheech and Chong stuff and making it gold. And, I don't know. I mean, that's one of those... was that conscious, or did you just by nature...
Conscious,
like, oh, this has to sound good.
No, I was actually just talking about this. Well, first, thanks. Second, there's... specifically when we had mixers say, like, oh, you know, if they were vaguely familiar with it, I'd send them all the stuff, the song, and I'd say, listen to Stan Freberg. This is how I want it to sound as your template, because I think there's a movement or a lot of these guys are coming from a musical background and they want to make it sound good as music.
Sure.
And that's totally secondary, even on this musical thing, because I want the jokes to be audible.
Yeah.
And Stan Freberg, you hear every joke just comes through so crystal clear just from a production standpoint.
So there's the aspect of like how the vocals are in the mix.
Right, technically.
How they sit in the mix. But there's also, we got some great Grammy-winning musicians on this album, and we had to do right by them.
Yeah.
And in the beginning, we were doing this... I mean, Joel was bringing... Like, Andrew W.K., Amy Mann, came to his garage while someone was mowing their lawn in a helicopter.
We had to wait for the trees to get cut down.
And we were like, Jesus. It was when Amy Mann was there, we were like, this is ridiculous. The weak point of the album shouldn't be the neighbor's lawnmower. Well, right. We can get
but
these people.
But I want to say,
that sounds
thanks
great.
To Lewis Ng, who came there with his high-quality recording stuff and recorded in there, it totally sounds legitimate.
Oh, it's great.
No idea. I wouldn't.
But we knew that we had to, like...
Yeah. You don't want to have that.
If these people are going to donate their time and they're fabulous musicians, really you have to honor them by...
It was really cool to have Amy Mann in my garage.
Yeah.
I bet.
Hanging out and playing guitar. That was fucking super cool.
That's one of the... that is a standout one, maybe because I saw the video first, but that's... I really love that band.
But oh, cool.
It's really fucking funny. But you guys really do span a lot of different things in this, too. It's not... I mean, it is history, of course, but you... There's a lot of different types of commentary throughout the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Also, damn it, you got Dick Cavett on a thing. That just blew my
mind.
Oh,
yeah. There's some... Yeah, there's some.
For me, it was Dick Gregory. On that same thing, I just couldn't. I was like,
old bit.
For me, how many times were we like, I can't believe these people. Right. Like, and this is just one of 28 track. Not to pitch the album too hard, but it was just a dream come true over and over and over again.
Yeah. Oh my god. Did you? So it's over the course of 16 months. How much of that was writing? I mean, were you writing it? Like, were you kind of like? The way a sitcom runs, were you writing it up to the minute you recorded it too? Were you like preparing it?
Yeah.
And each song moved at its own pace, depending on because, like I said, since everybody's donating their time, you're like, you're sketching out an idea, and then Paul F. Tompkins says you can come over on Saturday to record it.
Yeah.
Then everything stops, so you can get that song ready to record, and then it's there. And then, so that was like the, so it kind of went like that, and we sort of started.
And there were songs that were rewritten because an artist would be interested, and then they pass, and then a different artist, and we changed the sound of it. So we really wanted these songs to sound like they were coming from, like, a good organic fit for each of the artists.
Yeah.
So we would rewrite a song to fit, the folks who were doing it.
There's a Method Man was at one point a theoretical consideration for Escape from New York, and Zach Sherwin, who's this awesome comic rapper, and he helped on the lyrics, or he wrote a big chunk of the lyrics for that. But so one of the things I came to him when we had done, and it was like, we need some Method Man specific jokes, and he wrote a line that I just love, and it couldn't make it into the album because it was the song Escape from New York is all about the gentrification of New York. Mm-hmm. So his line is, it's getting hard. It's getting hard not to totally abandon hope, but everywhere I go has the same METHOD hand soap. And I just love that goddamn line so much. But couldn't make it. So
I something about that track actually that stands out because, as I explained earlier, I do have a day job, and that's where I was listening to the album. I got to pay attention through most of it, right? But that song came on, and I spaced some of it. But it's a mark of good satire that my head just like, oh, this is a really good rap song. I can't listen to it right now. And then I listen to it, I'm like, oh, this is about something completely different than I really, once I started actually getting the lyrics, I'm like, oh, fuck. I had no idea what was going on at first. I'm like, I know this is building
something. You spaced out during our 28 track, 3-hour comedy album?
I played him the job and
short attention span.
But that's another thing, too, is like, you guys have to... I mean, it's in, you know, by its nature, by its the fact it was recorded, the way it was, the way it was written, the way it was, don't take this as an insult, of course, it's all over the place, but in a good way, it's about many different things.
When we finally had it finished, and I listened to it, that was, at about song number 8, I was like, holy fuck, this thing is all... goddamn over the place.
The funny thing is we didn't listen to it from beginning to end until it was sent.
until it was mastered.
And so then we got what that's like. Yeah.
So then I'm the way I was like, oh my god, it's all over the place. By midway through, I'm like, what the fuck are these guys thinking? And then by the end, when it wraps back up and you hear the plot and the story wrap up, I'm like, that was really gratifying to hear these characters come through that absurd journey.
Yeah.
But that's what's so different is, like, somebody like Stan Freberg, he had probably all the time and money in the world. He had all these friends who at the time were big names. Mm-hmm. Now nobody knows who Paul Frees is or any of these other people. But, like, he was able to keep this very consistent tone and does sound like a Broadway show. It sounds like a radio show and a Broadway show, so we'll just there's where we'll meet in the middle. But sure. it's intentionally supposed to sort of lampoon a style and lampoon in a very specific way one specific series of events like that he picked out, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? So I mean that's why yours is what it is that it's you just pick so many things to work on.
Right.
I don't know, it's fun because of that though. And I think now you have, maybe not, but it feels like now you have to do that.
Yeah, well, it's also a product of we just kind of assumed that one in a thousand people would actually listen to it from beginning to end.
Right.
It's all made to stand alone so that you could like one song and
of course.
Listen to two or three.
It's also a huge vanity project. So it's very self-indulgent.
Right.
We had no idea when to say, okay, enough is enough. Let's cut this down.
Right. We were so grateful that at the end it turned out to be enough minutes to actually fit on a CD. because had it been one song more, which at different times it was...
Yeah.
It would not have fit.
We would have
had to make a fucking double album.
Right.
Of absurd. And so, yeah.
What would you have done in the 60s if you had only 45 minutes to work with?
Oh, God.
You know what I mean?
Been a lot tighter
uh-huh.
and funnier, yeah. maybe.
And funnier. Yeah. I love that you still
you have to assume dismissing it. We could have tightened it up to 45 great minutes. But, yeah. Who
Wait,
knows?
What's the maximum length of an LP?
About 45. 44, 45.
Cut some songs and we can...
Release it on vinyl.
Are you gonna do vinyl?
I would love.
It's the dream.
That would be so good.
Yeah,
it's the dream.
That'd be phenomenal. You'd have to come back on, and then we could talk about what you killed, what babies you right. killed, and make the thing.
Right. Or a triple album or ad songs.
Oh,
maybe that's the way to go.
I've never seen a comedy triple album, yeah. but I think just for the sake of doing it, you should do it.
That'd yeah,
be amazing. It'd be like a $50
a comedy triple album just seems like a lot of work. Not to make, but to listen to.
Yeah, oh, that's what God. I was thinking.
It seems like a
too.
Job
like,
yeah. to get through. You can't put a bookmark in it. It's just like
I'm trying to think. God, I normally have all these normal questions, but we're talking about so many different things. Normally it's brain fart time, but we've run through so much material already that I normally ask. You made friends over comedy. You've already told me that you did. When is the first time you bought your own comedy albums then?
Weird Al for me.
Yeah?
Yeah,
okay.
I heard, I think I saw the video for Eat It, and that was just like, wow, this is
so good.
Like the one-to-one parody aspect, I just...
So good.
I was so thrilled that existed.
Yeah.
And yeah, that really... turned me on to comedy
mm-hmm.
Specifically, and then I beyond Weird Al, what was the next?
I mean, the thing is, I listened to when I was, you know, junior high or whatever, there was a ton of Jerky Boys and a ton of Adam Sandler, but it was never stuff I owned. It was
yeah.
but it was always
yeah.
but it's the communal stuff you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
It was like somebody had it
yeah.
and then we huddled around and listened to them say these filthy things.
Of course
and lost your mind
right.
and, yeah, but it was I don't think I ever owned any of that stuff, and it wasn't until I got, you know, it wasn't until later when I started buying like stand-up CDs and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Like, kind of that is its own weird era of comedy, actually, is Adam Sandler and the Jerky Boys. Honestly, just those two. And then the two, and not to upset any of my former or coming up guests, but those are the two I always try and dissuade people from asking me about, because I never listened to them growing up.
Oh.
they bother me. But I'm not judging them as comedy at all. Like, I just, like, because I didn't grow up with them. Like,
There's absolutely albums that if you didn't listen to them at the time.
Exactly. It doesn't translate.
It doesn't?
Not as much.
Piece of shit car doesn't translate?
Nah, I listened to that. I would give you that. Okay, that... But now, I don't know if it's still funny. I haven't heard it in years.
I just heard it at the Festival Supreme. And he did it live.
Did he?
And it was fucking great.
Yeah,
no,
it was great. Oh, that's pretty good. Okay.
I'm just saying there are certain things if you don't hear
talk about production time. Quality.
Oh, yeah.
And that sounds like a legit perfect reggae song or whatever, doesn't it?
That's the problem with his albums for me, is because I didn't grow up with them, so I didn't really like them. But they're produced really well.
Yeah.
And that's one standalone from the period, I think, because the Jerky Boys didn't need to. They're fucking phone calls. They don't need to sound.
Is that What the Hell Happened to Me? Is that the one? Is that the first album?
I think so. That sounds about right. But those were being passed around among you and your friends. You're sitting around and listening. But that's the thing. It's like, that's the thrill of those. It was the whole point of me saying it's its own era, is it was the thrill of this filthy, filthy comedy as a kid. And it's it's very different, I think, from Weird Al, because it's this kind of nerdy thing. Do you know what appealed to you about it? It was just that it was, like, really good comedy? Because, I mean, there's... I think Adam Sandler is great, but there's also the filth aspect. So you got two things. One's going to suck you into the other, I feel like.
Yeah.
You know, whereas Weird Al, I guess it's the music sucking you into the comedy, or the comedy sucking you into the music.
I think Weird Al's got it. I mean, isn't the appeal that it's like... It's pop songs for kids who aren't cool enough to listen to pop songs.
Yeah, and definitely
isn't that true. It? That's it's true. Like it's like there's some kids in your school who are cool enough to listen to, I don't know. Pick a weird out who are cool enough to listen to Sting,
right?
Or the Police, like get it as a 13-year-old. And then there's the kids who want to hear, what is it?
Stop
King of
Suede.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Of course.
Right, and it's the it's the you don't have to wear a leather jacket to listen to King of Suede.
No. And you have to be and it does. It appeals to those kids, and it also appeals to the kids who absolutely hate the kids who are listening to that music too. And I was an angry little nerdy boy, so I was like, fuck those guys and their popular music.
Exactly.
This guy's making fun of that shit.
Yeah, no.
Like I felt so cool.
Yeah. You do feel cool listening, watching
Although,
your TV.
Although, I feel like a fucking idiot when he releases... His new album's coming out very soon, and the last two albums, I don't know any of the music, because I'm not up on pop music.
Yeah.
You don't know what he's making
No, it blows me by.
He's
so
hipper than we are.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Which is...
Amazing that he's been able to keep his career going. It's so cool.
I was just saying this to the aforementioned Zach, that, like, there needs to be one Weird Al... And only one Weird Al.
Mm-hmm.
He has to exist. When his career is done, mm-hmm. in 50 years, mm-hmm. when he's gone, there will have to be one and only one person who is doing exactly what he's doing.
Red Pirate
the
Roberts.
Fish to his Grateful Dead.
Right, right.
Yes, right. Good call. That's perfect.
That's another example of... I would listen to his album a couple times for all the jokes,
mm-hmm.
and then you're just listening to the songs.
Yeah, and that was something Stephen kept saying during this. He was like, the music has to be good enough that you can re-listen to it. Like,
Yeah. I mean, you want to be able to hear this album.
Yeah.
I mean, we that was the goal.
Yeah.
Because it can be trying. Comedy music can be very trying to listen to. And I think, I don't know if it was a conscious effort, if it was just let's mix it up style-wise, or how did you... I mean, was it just, this sounds good, this is the one? Was it just weeding it out? Weeding out the bad ones? Or not the bad ones, but the less catchy or the less... I mean, what was the process of deciding this one's going to be good enough?
Which ones ended up being funny
just
enough?
Funny.
And which ones were just a joke? Which ones were two sentences that we could never make?
Yeah.
Steven had an idea for a song that we just tried 7 versions of and never could get there, which was just about selling Mars in the future as a vacation destination, but it's basically like a Senior Frogs Cancun where we've moved to Mars and just turned it into it's all in a dome and it's all the same sandy beaches. And
I still love the concept.
It's a
we
great
never
concept.
Got
we can
it.
Never get it as a dope.
And the time machine, like the one that ended up being the Reggie Watts, Right Said Fred,
mm-hmm.
Mind the Alex song. Just another... A
casual collaboration between we tried.
That went through so many
iterations.
We tried
4 or 5 different versions
really?
Of getting time travel before we could get the time travel that we thought was before we landed upon that.
Mm-hmm.
We only landed upon that because Right Said Fred wrote back to our dream ask, willing to do comedy.
That's amazing.
Which was awesome. And it was,
That's so good. That one kind of blew my mind because I wasn't looking at the track listings as I was listening to it. What the fuck? Did you just say Right Said Fred? Holy crap.
Yeah, that's probably the most random of all the... Yeah.
So.
Hopefully in a good way.
Yeah.
And that, sorry, maybe we should bounce back to Stand Free.
Let's do it.
More. I apologize. I'm bad at keeping people on track. But the thing is, you never listen... You've listened to the follow-up to this album, but have you... Either of you really haven't followed him much after that, right?
No. I don't know another thing about
it. We tried to get him on the album.
Yeah.
Did you?
We tried.
Oh,
yeah.
Damn it.
That didn't happen.
He's hard to nail down.
That's what...
I'm still trying to get him on the podcast.
Very cool.
Yeah. It may happen, but he's, again, very hard to nail down.
Yeah.
It's so funny. With some of these dudes are still busting ass working comedians,
uh-huh.
and it's so weird to me. Like, you would think, I could
Wait, does he,
chill.
Does he perform?
Still does.
Oh, he does?
Yeah. He and his wife write and perform stuff together. I don't know if it's the same kind of stuff. It's still political.
Uh-huh.
Like, he's still... He'll never give that
Gotta
up.
Gotta go see him.
He was a big angry hippie, before angry hippies were a thing.
Uh-huh.
You know, so...
Oh, I would love to see him see him live.
Yeah. No, I would too. Do you, I'm trying to think, but it's...
But yeah, I heard the follow-up.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's some stuff on it. It's, you know, I should go back and re-listen to them both now, because when I watched Ace Ventura, I thought it was the greatest movie that had ever happened. It changed my life.
Of course.
Then when I saw Ace Ventura 2, I thought, oh, they're just ripping off a bunch of the Ace Ventura stuff, and I wasn't as into it. And now, and then 5 years later, you go back and rewatch them, and Ace Ventura 2 blows Ace Ventura out of the water. It's vastly superior, and all the things that you're like, oh, they're just redoing that joke, it's not, it's the character he created in the thing. So, like, I wonder now, re-listening to it, how would I feel about them, now that it's not, instead of just thinking of it as a follow-up, just as comedy, I wonder how, you know.
That makes sense.
I don't know. I'll have to go back and re-listen to them both.
I mean, I can tell you the first one does hold up because, like I said, the first time I heard it was only a few months ago, and it's just—I don't know. It's just—it's kind of perfect.
Yeah.
You know, it's just really well made. It's beautifully musical. It could be, and who knows? Maybe one day will be a musical because you could turn that into.
Absolutely.
That
yeah. Goal,
you know, that'd be great.
Yeah.
And you should do that with this album too.
Yeah.
I'm commit to it right now. That's what I'm asking you.
Okay. We deal. He's sold. That was your goal from.
That was the goal from the beginning.
Yeah.
Yep.
Really?
Yep, Broadway musical.
That would be fucking fantastic.
That's the dream.
That would be amazing. I'd watch it.
I mean, did Stan Freberg ever do this stuff as a live performance piece?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. I mean, his I think he was more like his individual songs where he was making fun of the Banana Boat song and like weird, like, you know, just like, hey, here's a modern song. I'm just going to make fun of this person who sounds kind of like an asshole to me. Like, you know, I think that's mostly the stuff he did live. I could be wrong. I could be talking out of my, I am talking out of my ass, but I don't know if they, this
we'll
one
edit
is
this
like
part
so
out
complicated.
You,
no, it's okay. Totally I have wrong. Made an ass of myself on here so many times, but let's see. Here we go. I flip to in Freberg's autobiography. He detailed his efforts to have the songs and skits produced on Broadway. When this failed, he used material omitted from the original album in the sequel. So there we go.
So first of all, it answers the question that he didn't need to wait 30 years to make jokes about World War I.
Right.
And second of all, this answers the question of what do you do if you have more than 45 minutes of comedy?
You wait 30 years.
Wait 30 years until the time is right.
Until he's ready for more.
Bring it on, America.
It's just, it's strange to me that, well, I mean, I'm sure he had his own reasons to follow. I would be pissed, frankly, if my thing didn't succeed. So I guess after a while, that bitterness subsides and... Where's my old material? Oh, here, I have a whole album's worth of shit that I can pump
right.
again. Which also, I mean, it sounds like you guys have a whole album's worth of stuff. Or two.
You mean extra?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't think it's gold.
Usable. It's not usable.
No, okay.
I don't think it's bronze. I think bronze and above got on this album.
Yeah, I think that's true.
It's good to have that stuff, though.
Sure. Who knows what it'll turn into in 10 years? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I think that's like, it's just like a, it's a hard drive of a comedy notebook. It's musical comedy ideas that may or may not turn into something 5 years down the road.
Yeah. Do you guys have an idea for what the next thing is? Or are you just right now, let's talk, let's just deal with this? Or
The next project is a movie.
The next project is go to Ohio and make a movie.
Really?
Yep.
Yeah.
Nice. See, it's good. I like hearing when people go back home and do that stuff.
Yeah, I think that's a place where I can get a lot cheaper.
Of course.
Than in Los Angeles. And so, and I think it's the, we have these, sort of this album kind of proved to us that we can take whatever we want to do and make it somehow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, it was very inspiring that way. So now I, you know, want to make a movie.
That's awesome. That's so good. Plus Ohio's awesome. I do like Ohio.
It's great. Yeah.
Not touted enough as a great place. My dad used to be stationed at Wright Pat.
Oh, that's so where we're, you know, Dayton and from, and
mm-hmm.
Yellow Springs is, I think, where we're going to go back.
I still want
to
go to that hangar where the aliens supposedly are. My dad won't let me go.
No.
Nobody will let me go. I'll get shot. But, you know. Rumor has it. I have a friend who's from Cleveland whose uncle worked on the Manhattan Project and has been in that hangar.
Wow. And he says?
He won't say anything.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Mm-hmm. That's all I'm saying.
That's a marketing
thing. That's enough.
Yeah,
for me,
it's a
right?
It's a really great
so great.
Right.
okay, so I always like to ask people if nobody's heard Stan Freberg. Why would you recommend this as a good, just, I mean, here's the thing, you don't know his whole catalog, that doesn't mean anything, it's still valuable to you, so why would you recommend to somebody to listen to this album? What's valuable about it?
I guess just general comedy storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's like, you know, I don't know. I guess it's being able to move through a big, massive, weird thing with a narrative and with music and with an energy that keeps it going and that keeps you interested in it. You know, that's really a shitty
George Washington character is great.
Yeah.
He's such a dope, and it's just it's worth it for that.
Yeah.
He's that bit where
the Christopher Columbus character is great too. I guess Christopher Columbus and George Washington are kind of the same character.
Well,
but in the best possible way.
I mean, George Washington, it's Christmas Eve, he's crossing the Delaware, and he's just stuck on how his wig looks and which boat he wants to rent, the boat rental, the Donald Duck or the Popeye.
Oh, yeah, the Donald Duck or the Popeye.
Yeah.
That's brilliant.
I was thinking that is still hilarious.
I forgot about that. It's a great bit.
Yeah, you just want to slide. So irritating.
I mean, among all the great music, it's pretty rapid fire.
Yeah.
You know, and that's... I don't know. It's its own thing, though. It's not like this was a kind of album people were making then, either.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody was making a Broadway show in an album that wasn't already a Broadway show.
Right.
And it's also produced better than a lot of Broadway cast albums from the time, too.
And the music he uses so well. Like, the music and the narrator, you know, with all its gravitas, is the straight man.
Mm-hmm.
And then the characters are just so ridiculous.
Yeah, I guess if I had to answer that question again... correctly, I would say funny voices. That's the reason to listen to it. They're really funny voices.
They are. Yeah, and honestly, like, if you want to know about voice actors at the time, that's all of them, including Freeberg. I mean, he was a big cartoon guy, too. So that's, you know, for any nerds out there who are into voiceover as much as I am, that's a good reason to listen to this, too.
Yeah.
So why don't you, let's plug the album again, plug the charity again, plug Twitter, plug everything else.
The charity is One Kid, One World. But there's no space between one and kid, and there's no space between one and world.
All right.
And the album, if you go to 2776.us, you can find all the links to buy, preview, watch videos from the album.
Comes out July 1st, right?
Comes out July 1st.
Mm-hmm.
You can pre-order it now on Amazon or
CD Baby.
Mm-hmm. And now is whenever this podcast ends.
Next Wednesday.
Next Wednesday.
Right, yeah. So one day after it has been released, you can pre-order.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, yes, by the time this comes out, you can go and buy the album. So 2776.us, 2776.us, and then there's some associated Twitter.
Follow Levinson and Brothers on Twitter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. That's it.
That's it. Hope you enjoy the album.
It's a solid album. I can at least say that. Well, thank you guys for being here.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you guys for
talking about this. We're in Steven's home, so thank you for stepping here.
You guys actually have to leave.
Oh, right.
I'm so sorry.
Oh.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah. Someone else coming in. Talk about their Woody Allen album.
Yeah, I just texted a bunch of people your address. I hope that's cool. But thank you for doing this, and everybody, thank you for listening, and as always, have a good thing.
Comedy on Vinyl is a production of Stolen Dress Entertainment. It is produced by Mike Warden and is hosted and edited by Jason Klom. Our theme song was composed and performed by Richard Levinson. Please visit stolendress.com to listen to our other podcasts, read our blogs, read our tweets, watch our videos, and read our books. Please subscribe on iTunes, and if you like us, give us a 5-star rating and a nice review. You can find us on facebook.com/comedyonvinyl, Twitter @comedyonvinyl, and find everything else at comedyonvinyl.com. I'm Jason Klom. Each week, my best friend Dan Gomiller and I relive the comedy of our youths on Dan and Jay's Comedy Hour, the podcast. You'll hear comedy and improv gems going back as far as 1993, making it the most easily avoidable and embarrassing thing we could put ourselves through each week. But mostly, listen as two best friends catch up for an hour each week, one from Boise and one from Burbank, the cultural hubs of the world. So find Dan and Jay's Comedy Hour, the podcast, at iTunes, or at stolendress.com's podcast section. For more, go to djchpodcast.stolendress.com. Don't do that. Just go to stolendress.com.